tell you, one of the great things about being out on Christmas Eve and on New Year's is that, you know, you just don't have any listeners. You could do all this great stuff. You know, it had nothing to do with listeners. You know, after one. I think that would be the perfect concept of the perfect TV show or the perfect nightclub show or the perfect radio show. If you could eliminate the listeners, boy, you could do some fantastic stuff. That's cynical. Excuse me. Oh, there's nothing to teach you the mortality of your own soul than a sip of medium lukewarm coffee out of a cup here made out of paper. Incidentally, you know, there's a special taste with the paper, you know, mixes with the coffee. And there's a special brand of coffee that's being produced for people who live their lives out in offices and drink this rotten coffee out of paper cups. It's a coffee that, when ground and brewed, blends perfectly with the taste of a dissolving paper cup and therefore produces a palatable cup of coffee. You know, that's known as working with your problems. Now, on the other hand, now here it is. It's Christmas Eve. What do you say about Christmas Eve? You know, you could sing... I was just thinking, you know, Christmas Eve is a funny, very strange evening for most people in a big city. You always, every year, no matter what year, I can't remember a year when I didn't talk to people who said, I don't know what there is about this Christmas. I just can't get in the mood. It just doesn't seem like Christmas to me this year. How many times have you heard that? I can't remember one year when he didn't say that. But, you know, it's just at the last minute, there's a curious spurt of whatever it is that makes people do whatever it is that makes people do. And I think since it is Christmas Eve, I'm not going to even try to do a formal-type show, really. I can remember, speaking of Christmas Eve, you know, Christmas is a curious... time of, I think one of the reasons why there's a great number of suicides, you know, over this period, you probably know that, over the period of Christmas, New Year's, that whole thing, is that for the first time, many people are literally forced to accept the fact that they too have a memory. You know, a lot of people do not remember clearly last Wednesday in their daily lives. They simply don't. It's like the mind is some kind of a cosmic tape recorder, but it has a built-in eraser. And stuff happens to you, you walk around, and you see the world, you see things. Your mind is careful erasing it. Only the trouble with that is that it's a curious kind of eraser. It works sporadically. And furthermore, it seems to work without any specific rhyme nor reason. Important things that you say to yourself at the time when they happen, I'm going to remember this. It's a fantastic moment in my life. But 6 minutes later, you can't remember it. You know, you really can't. On the other hand, totally trivial, idiotic things will stick with you constantly. Now, this drives... psychologist right up the tree for a number of reasons. Because for one thing, you're supposed to go through your life picking up traumatic experiences that forever change you. Well, most of us don't. You know, we just sort of flub along, and we don't hardly remember one year from the next. Half the time, if you ran into the bank, whenever you're making out a check, you know, you're standing in the bank there, and there's about 500 people around, the guards around there. Do you ever have to remind yourself what year it is? It's a 70, you know. I mean, that's sad. That's bad news, but it's the way the mind works. You're not the only one. You're really not the only one. I mean, I'm sure that that this happens even in more cosmic situations. I mean, I'm sure that the president wakes up some morning and says, hey, what the hell? What was it? Oh, yeah, that's right, I'm president. Yeah. I mean, it must be, well, at least for now, anyway. I wonder what Agnew's waking up to do. I mean, what does he think? I mean, these things are the kind of things that cross your mind at a time like Christmas. You run around and you see things. and your mind keeps popping them over. You know, since this is Christmas Eve, I'm walking down through Times Square over this entire weekend, walking around Times Square, because this is where we are here. This hotbed of sin is right here off of Times Square. Yeah, we're thinking of putting in a good line of pornies and, you know, going all the way. What the hell? Make Channel 9 sing. But can you imagine pornies with Preparation H commercials coming on between reels? And the lady plumber. No, I mean, why is my mind like this? It shouldn't be like this. Now, for heaven's sakes, I should think cosmic thoughts like Dustin Hoffman and, stand up straight and do all that stuff. But nevertheless, here it is. It's Christmas Eve, and we're still here. We're still flubbing along. And, you know, while on the subject of Christmas Eve, I was going through Times Square. See, nothing changes in Times Square. There's one store down here, a pointy store. I love to see this little touch of the classic tradition. I go past this pointy store down there, and here they had this whole collection of, it says adult slides. They had them in the, whatever an adult slide is. They had adult slides in the window there, see? And underneath it, it says special gift offer for someone really special on your list. And it had a little mistletoe on the... Somehow I like the idea of mistletoe on a collection of adult porny slides. You know what mistletoe means, don't you? You know that this is a hanging mistletoe. Somehow the idea of a guy going to a giant adult-type orgy and hanging mistletoe from the ceiling has a certain panache to it. But while we're on the subject of panaches here... Excuse me here. May I do a commercial, gentlemen? I hate to interrupt you in there, but I'd like to do one here. It's for your father's mustache. Are they open over this? Sure, I guess they are. Your father's mustache is placed down on 7th Avenue and 10th Street, and it's down the village. It's a wild place. There's always a big line out there, but it's a great place to go in and have a little... dish of inexpensive shrimp. That sounds like a contradiction in terms. Chicken, burgers, and great suds. They have a live Dixieland band. They sing along, you know, hit and holler at each other and wear straw hats. And they have classic old-time movies. And if you wind up there at your father's mustache at the corner of 7th Avenue and 10th Street, it's down the village if you're going to the village. That's where it is, 7th and 10th, right in the heart of Sheridan Square there. You just walk up and you say, "Excelsior, you fathead," and they'll let you in free. And, of course, that is after they've dashed the water in your face when the bartenders hit you in the mouth after you've said that. But you'll be all right down there. Now, do you have another one in there for me? It's on a cartridge. Yes, hit the button there, please.
The world's greatest magicians perform at the World Festival of Magic and the Occult, the weirdest show on earth, an unforgettable experience. Bring the whole family. Hold each other's hand. The World Festival of Magic and the Occult. The weirdest show on earth.
Wednesday, December 12th through Sunday, December 30th at the Felt Forum in Madison Square Garden Center. For ticket information, call 212-564-4400. Tickets also at Ticketron.
All right, would you prepare those real knocked-out, mean piano things in there for me? Since this is Christmas Eve, and I have a thing here for you. Now, it is not well known, but you will know it after I do this for you, that Robert Service, who's the guy that wrote The Shooting of Dan McGrew and The Cremation of Sam McGee, wrote a couple of rather interesting Christmas poems. and typical, you know, speaking of here I am, you know, about to read some Robert Service on the radio on Christmas Eve, but that reminded me of something. I don't know why I was reminded of it. In fact, I saw an LP of this the other day in a record shop where they sell nothing but real remainder LPs, like bongo music played by Lawrence Welk. I mean, you know, can you imagine people buying this? But there it is. And I was going through this thing, and here was an LP of a famous Christmas Eve radio show that was like a tradition. You know, there aren't many mass media traditions. Now, what is a tradition? A tradition is like something that is repeated year after year, and it kind of assumes a classical, timeless quality about it. And at one time, there was a radio show that was broadcast every Christmas Eve, and I can remember my father and mother listening to it all the time, and I couldn't quite understand what it was about, but they listened to it, and it seemed to be part of Christmas, and they'd have it on all the time. What was that radio show? And I'll tell you, the lead character, it was a drama, and the lead character was played by a famous American actor. Now, how's that for a piece of genuine trivia? But it wasn't trivial, because, you know what, I've begun to believe that some of the really great stuff that happened on the radio or television is never talked about much. Always the really bad stuff gets to be later appreciated. Really. And I don't know why this is so, but it happens to be. Now, who did this performance? And they even had LPs out on it. There were LPs available on this show, and probably somebody in this country right now is playing it on a radio station someplace. Not in New York, as far as I know, but what was the production? Well, since nobody seems to know, I won't answer it. I'll just let you hang by your thumb. The hell with you. This is WOR New York, and... Christmas has many facets, and here is one of Robert Service's poems about Christmas. And if you'll give me a little typical Robert Service, yeah, that's it. That's the kid at the piano there playing the jagtime, as he says, jagtime tune. Bring it up to him. I guess he meant rag, but he wrote jag. Playing a jagtime tune. This is Robert W. Service, written in 1903. My father Christmas passed away when I was barely seven. At 21, a lackaday, I lost my hope of heaven. Yet not in either lies the curse. The hell of it's because I don't know which hurt the worse. My God or Santa Claus? That's a cynical little piece, but that, not bad. That's an interesting. It's very unusual for Service, because Service wrote long narrative poems generally, complete with all kinds of curious allusions. But this is direct, clean, and to the point, and it's absolutely timeless. My father Christmas passed away when I was barely seven. At 21, alack-a-day, I lost my hope of heaven. Yet not in either lies the curse. The hell of it's because I don't know which loss hurt the worse. My God or Santa Claus? What happened to him at 21 that he lost the hope of ever going to heaven? What did he do? What happened at 7 that made him forever forget Santa Claus? Now, here's a classical, this is a classical Robert Service poem, and this, again, is about Christmas. It's called The Trapper's Christmas Eve. You got to remember that Service wrote about Alaska mostly. His greatest poems were about the Klondike and the Yukon. And he spent a lot of winters in the Klondike. And in fact, he was part of the great gold rush of the 1890s up in the Klondike, the Whitehorse region. And he knew that cold weather. In fact, when he finally got out of Alaska, he promised himself he would never be cold again in his life. And he went to live on the French Riviera and never was cold again in his life. All right, this is The Trapper's Christmas Eve. It's mighty lonesome-like and drear. Above the wild, the moon rides high and shows up sharp and needle-clear, the emptiness of earth and sky. No happy homes with love aglow. No Santa Claus to make believe. Just snow. And snow. And then more snow. It's Christmas Eve. It's Christmas Eve. And here I am where all things end and undesirables are hurled. A poor old man without a friend, forgot and dead to all the world, clean out of sight and out of mind. Well, maybe it's better so. We all in life our level find, and mine, I guess, is pretty low. Yet I sit with pipe alight beside the cabin fire. It's queer this mind of mine must take tonight the backward trail of 50 years. The schoolhouse and the Christmas tree, the children with their cheeks aglow, two bright blue eyes that smile on me, just half a century ago. Again, it's maybe 40 years when faith and trust, almost divine, these same blue eyes abrim with tears, through depths of love look into mine, a parting, tender, soft, and low, with arms that cling and lips that cleave. It's long ago, yet it seems clear this Christmas Eve. Just 30 years ago, again, we say a bitter last goodbye. Our lips are white with wrath and pain. Our children cling and cry. Whose was the fault? Well, it matters not, for men and women both deceive. It's buried now and all forgot. Forgiven, too, this Christmas Eve. And she, God pity me, is dead. Our children, men and women grown, I like to think that they are wed with children of their own that crowd around their Christmas tree or would not ever have them grieve or shed a single tear for me to mar their joy this Christmas Eve. Stripped to the buff and gaunt and still lies all the land in grim distress, like lost soul wailing long and shrill. A wolf howl cleaves the emptiness, and then hushed as death is everything. The moon rise haggard and forlorn. Oh, hark the herald angels sing. God bless old men. It's Christmas morn. He has a great irony about him. So he's in the middle of all. Listen to this great line. The moon rides haggard and forlorn. Great description of the moon, haggard and forlorn. Thank you. That's great. He's got a couple of others. Did you ever hear about the bomb on Christmas Eve? You know, that reminds me of something, though. I mean, everybody once in a great while. Do you ever look back and think about curious, completely unexpected Christmases that you may have spent? You know, that's one of the things that makes holidays important. You know that every society of men, even the most primitive, celebrates holidays. It seems to be a basic urge of man to somehow put on a paper cap, to put on a paper hat and blow a horn. And it's a symbolic thing, you know. It is very much so. No matter what you call it, the idea of everybody celebrating a certain thing at a certain time, everybody, seems to be endemic to man, no matter what condition he's in. And the one thing that these days do is that they set this day out, whatever the celebration is, whatever you call it in whatever society it is, it sets that day apart from all the other days of the year, the 364 others, which are just like any other Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday. And for that reason, you can remember that day. If you really seriously think about it, you know, you really remember it. Well, I've spent some strange Christmases, and when you're in a business or in a world, or if you've lived a certain kind of life. Now, I think many people's lives are comparatively straight line, and my life has, because of being in show business, being in the army, one thing or another, my life is not like the kind of guy who lives a life of almost static, straight-line activity, so that one Christmas seems very much like the next to people who have lived in the same house and who visit the relatives every Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever it might be. And so their lives tend to become sort of homogenous. You follow what I'm saying here? If you have lived the life of, say, Willie Loman from The Death of a Salesman, his Christmases are all different. If he spends it in a hotel room in Boston, that's not quite the same as spending it around the family hearth in Darien. No way. Well, one of my most curious Christmases involves New York. And this was before I lived in New York, and I didn't even know anything about New York. Have you ever... It's hard, you know, when I say, have you ever actually remembered the first times you saw something really spectacular, like the first time you saw the ocean? If you live in New York, you don't remember the first time you saw the ocean, I'm sure. Well, I remember the absolute first day I saw the ocean, and it really threw me. I remember really something else, you know, And that was really something. I looked out and said, that's the ocean. You know, you hear about the ocean all your life. Even if you're in Indiana, you know there's an Atlantic Ocean. And you hear about it. Well, the first time I saw it, I mean, it had a curious, traumatic experience. It was the ocean. Truly timeless. Well, I can remember the first day I saw New York City. Absolutely, the first day I saw New York City. And it occurred 1 week before this strange Christmas that I'm about to tell you about. I was in the Army. Now, that's one of the great things about being in the armed forces that is never really talked much about. The armed forces give, and I'm certainly not pro-Army or pro-war or any of this stuff, but what it does do, it's almost a natural consequence of being in the Army or being in the Navy or the Marines or the Air Force, whatever it might be, is that it tends to puts your life into totally different tracks. It puts your life on different roadways that you never would have traveled had you not gone into those things. I wonder how many guys' lives have been forever changed by being in the Army. And I don't mean by the traumatic experience of getting wounded or anything like that. I'm talking about it took you away from something and gave you a totally different perspective on life. And you never can turn back. Once you see something that you only half suspected was there, it's difficult to ever return to the same innocence that you had prior to that glimpse of whatever it might be. And it's not necessarily paradise. It can be hell, too, you know. Once you find out there is a hell, you can never go back to Griffith, Indiana, with the same view that you had before. I'm telling you the truth. So most people, unfortunately, have had not that kind of thing happened to him. But I remember this first time I came into New York. It was really cold. I mean, really cold. And I had been sent out to the East Coast. And I was with this... our company had been assigned out to the coast here for a brief course they were giving us in some esoteric piece of electronic equipment. I'd like to tell you that it was something quite, really romantic. But what it was a piece of extremely technical electronic gear. You're curious what it was? Well, it had to do with a form of link radio linkage. You've seen those towers up on hills with the big parabolic reflector, which reflect the television station. Actually, they're repeater stations. They repeat the television signal or they repeat the telephone signals. Well, we were working with some highly secret linkage equipment is what we were doing, okay? So they completely cut out all leaves. No way. We got into New York. Actually, we weren't in New York. We were out of Fort Monmouth. And we knew New York was over there. And I remember sitting in the barracks one night. And here I am. I'm in Fort Monmouth. Well, how far is Fort Monmouth from New York? It's about 65 miles, 50 miles, 40 miles, not even that. And it's right over in Jersey. So I'm sitting in the barracks one night, and a guy sitting at the next bunk, who I remember, he was from New York, and he was in our company, Company K. I always
I wonder if he's listening tonight. I always remember this guy. He's a great big lunky guy named Goldworm. So Goldworm says, I can almost taste it. He says, wow. He said, boy, would I love to get in New York tonight. And here it was, the first night we had arrived. And we're in the barracks, and I said, gee, that would be great. And he says, oh, man, he says, I know about 5,000 chicks I'd love to see tonight. Oh, wow. And, And at that point, he says to me, he says, when was the last time you were in New York? I said, I've never been in New York. Shit, never been in New York. He couldn't believe it. I says, no, I've never even been to New York. And here we were sitting in Fort Monmouth. Well, the next week, I came into New York with Goldworm and Gassett, these other two guys from the company. We hitchhiked in, and they had no money at all, and they were giving us only six-hour leaves because this company that we were in was a very secret company, and they wouldn't let us out. They would only let a small number of guys out each time. They would leave us out. So we had our 6 hours. So we came into New York, and I remember getting out off the back of a truck. This guy took us in over here by the Port Authority. We jumped off the truck and walked. We walked east, and I suspect it was about 40th Street or 41st Street. And I looked around, and said, you know, all these buildings, everything else stretching to the sky. And I felt, I hate to tell you this, a profound disappointment, because it looked like Chicago, where I had spent, most of my life. I looked around. Somehow I thought New York would have a certain curious magic to it, but it turned out to look just like Chicago. Walked along, and Gasser had never been to either Chicago or New York, so he was really completely knocked out. He said, oh, my God, look at this. Fantastic. I said, I don't know. Walking along there. You know, they were very hip, you know, I don't know. So that was the first time I ever saw New York. And I remember even how the light was. It hit me a certain way. The light was late December light, you know, that sort of yellowish orange light. It was not cloudy. The sun was at a low angle, and the wind was blowing. It was cold and bitter, and we walked around the town, and we just went back and hitchhiked back. That was it. That was our first day there. But it stuck with me, that New York thing. And during that week, there was a company announcement. Of course, everybody wanted to get home for Christmas. It's one of the big deals, you know, in the armed services, get home for Christmas. And everybody wanted to get home. Well, there was a rule in this company, Company K in Signal Corps there, the 3162nd. There was a rule that only one-third of the company would be allowed to have a three-day pass at any given time. I suspect that rule still holds in many companies. So they just posted the list. That's it. There was no recourse, no going back. That's it. The list was posted. And I wasn't on the list. Neither was Gasser. No pass. No three-day pass. Well, Christmas was, I believe, on a Saturday or a Sunday that day. It was a Friday or a Saturday. It was around the weekend anyway. And so we simply were not getting out. Well, during the early part of the week, the first sergeant had all of us in the barracks there, you know. He comes in, Kowalski says, all right. He says, well, listen, you guys, we're going to have a Christmas party here in the company. For all you guys that ain't got no pass, there's going to be a Christmas party. And I want this barracks here policed up and GI'd. I want this place cleaned up for the party. We're going to have a lot of fun, right? And I want all you guys to police up the barracks here. I want you guys to get ready to have a lot of fun at Christmas. We're going to use some of the company funds. We're going to have a Christmas party. Well, he goes stomping out. Well, we're going to have a party. Now, part of the party, of course, was usually they give you the chance to sleep late. You don't have to get up early in the morning or any of this stuff. And so the day before Christmas, we're sitting in the barracks that night, and all the guys that were off were packed and were cutting out. These guys were leaving for three-day passes all over the country. They were splitting, and they were all going over to McGuire Air Force Base, which is where you could get planes. You know, the Air Force was flying planes around. They always had usual planes, and you could hitchhike a ride. If you lived in Chicago, you get on a plane going out to Chicago, a military plane.
So they were all cutting out. Oh, they were, you know, the guys were carrying Christmas presents. We're sitting around the barracks. We're stuck. Crummy. So, all right. So they're all gone by 8 o'clock that night. This was the day before Christmas. And there's nobody left but us chickens. The guys that lost the great Irish sweepstakes of the Christmas past. The guys that lost the punch bowl of the time. I'm just sitting there in our barracks, bags and stuff, just fooling around. And it was cold. Oh, boy, can it get cold. We were living in a tent, incidentally, at that point. They'd moved us during the week, and they put us in these tents because we were about to ship immediately following the Christmas, New Year's holidays. We were going to go somewhere. So they put us in what they called a ready area. This was a whole series of ice-cold tents. And I'm telling you, I don't know whether you've ever spent a Christmas in a tent. I mean, against your will. Now, a lot of people go camping. That's not the same thing, friend. Not the same. And you get so that you're totally inured to cold. I'm going to say this to you. If you're worried about getting cold this winter, you know, all this business of the energy crisis, you'd be surprised how quickly your body gets used to cold. And I'm talking about comparative cold all the time. All the time. It was always cold in the tent. It was, and the wind would blow over the top of the canvas. And you could just hear the canvas flapping. It was always cold. So we're sitting in the tent, and Gas is sitting there. I remember Edwards was sitting there. It was the night before Christmas, and we were going to have this big Christmas party the next day in the company. Now, I don't know whether you've ever had a Christmas party in a mess hall. They have a certain charm. They really do. I hate to say this. They do. Because adversity draws people together. That's the truth. Well, we're sitting there, and when we hear this clumping along out on the wooden, they had these wooden walkways out in front of the tent, so you hear this clumping out there, and his head sticks in, and it's this corporal, the duty corporal. He says, "Hey," he said, you shepherd." I said, "Yeah." He says, "Gasser, Edwards?" He says, "Come on down to the orderly room, they got something down there for you." And so we got up, we put on our coats, and we went trotting down to the orderly room, figuring it was another crummy detail we're pulling. We get down to the orderly room, there's about 50 other guys down there, and it turns out that somehow, through some curious moment of beneficence, some moment of total charity, the command has decided to give 24-hour passes to a certain selected people. You know, just let's give out some more passes is what they say. 24-hour passes. So we had a pass. So I came back, and it was totally unexpected. See, pass. What is this pass? We came, because, you know, when your mind is set that you're not going to get anything, your mind gets set that way. And you just sort of accept it. And the next thing you know, you're just worrying about getting another sandwich. That's about all. You know, you're not worried about going out. But here we've got a pass, totally unaccepted, totally without any explanation. We're very excited about it. We can run it back. We put on our clothes. We're, you know, first Class A uniform. And unfortunately, I might say this, that due to the fact that I was not going to get a pass, and I had resigned myself to that fact, I had not sent my uniform to the cleaners. Well, I had as gamey a Class A uniform as has ever come. really gamey. See? So the hell with that. So I put on my uniform and the gasser's getting dressed. Because you don't ever take the risk that they're going to change their mind. When you get a pass in your hand, you go, man. You do not argue. And we didn't know where we were going to go. By the way, there was one stipulation. We had to stay within a 75-mile radius of the camp. That was part of this 24-hour pass. So 20 minutes later, we are out on the highway hitchhiking to New York. This was Christmas, remember, and this was the night before Christmas, which would make it, Christmas Eve, really. It's tonight. It's Christmas Eve. And here we were dumbfounded because here we were suddenly released from the company party, and we're out there on the highway hitchhiking. It was cold and windy,
These cars and trucks are going by us. And I don't know. I don't remember what highway or what we were on, but we were on the main road that eventually gets to New York out of Fort Monmouth. I don't know where it was. Because I just remember standing out there and hitchhiking. And finally, along comes a guy in a Studebaker. And he pulls up to us, and he slews to a stop, and he says, all right, Ace, come on, let's go. Get in, you guys. A real Jersey, I'd say. We pile into the car, and he says, where are you guys going? And we says, we're going into New York. He says, where in New York? He says, oh, yeah, you're just New York. You know, we were that naive. You just go to New York. You know, New York could be Queens, Staten Island, anything. We're just going to New York. He says, all right. He says, I'm driving in. So we're sitting in the back seat of the car, and the wind is blowing, and we're going up over. I remember we went up over U.S. 1 for a while. I remember being on U.S. 1. That impressed me. Because, you know, U.S. 1, that's the number one M1, you know. And we're driving through all the trucks and stuff. And finally, he says, okay, he says, here I am. And we went through a tunnel, I remember. And we are out in Brooklyn. Brooklyn. Well, I had never been to Brooklyn before. Brooklyn, to me, was a legendary place. It was a place they always made jokes about on the radio shows. And before we go any further, by the way, speaking of making merry, we have here another Your Father's Mustache spot. And if you're looking for a place over this Christmas holiday where the beer is good and the music is good and the people are warm and it's going to be a nice, time, I would suggest that you drop by Your Father's Mustache at 7th Avenue and 10th Street in the Village. They have really good, they have Dixieland, if you dig Dixie. They have a lot of banjo players, and they sing, and they have shrimp and chicken and burgers and a lot of beer. They serve beer there till hell would never freeze over, you know? So this is at the corner of 7th Avenue and 10th Street. It's called Your Father's Mustache. It's famous all over the world, and they're there, and they're ready to welcome you with open arms over this Christmas holiday. But speaking of welcoming us with Christmas holiday and charms, we couldn't figure out how the hell to get out of Brooklyn. Now, when you have never been in Brooklyn before, you don't know anything about New York. This is a real mystery. So we're walking down the street. It's cold. Wow. I never realized it could be that cold in New York. I mean, cold, we're walking along. And we are so glad to be out. I mean, just absolutely fantastically glad to be out of the camp. We're walking along the street, and we're asking people how to get to New York. Well, it says, you're in New York, and it's Brooklyn. I said, no, we want to go to Manhattan, you know. So we finally wind up on a subway. Now, I had never been on a subway before. and we didn't know, you know, anything about subways. One guy was from California. Gasser was from California. I was from the Midwest. And Edwards was from someplace up in Maryland. We didn't know anything about the subway. And we got on the damn subway, and we went the wrong way. I remember sitting in that subway hour after hour, people getting in and out, and all of a sudden it stopped. We are way down by Coney Island someplace. We're way out in the boondocks. 50 times colder. We had not walked around. It didn't look like New York. We asked people how to get to Manhattan. We wandered back down through the subway, bought another subway token, and went the other way. Another 5 hours, it seemed like. And finally, the thing disgorged us right in the middle of Times Square on Christmas Eve. Well, there was hardly anybody there. You know how it is on Christmas Eve? The town almost empties out. And we wandered around, didn't know what to do. It's about 8, 9 o'clock, and they were playing recorded carols out of shops and stores. And we wandered over to a canteen, you know, the USO. We wandered over to the USO. And there were a lot of nice ladies playing trombones and singing Christmas carols. This is not exactly what we had in mind for Christmas. But we sat there and ate tuna salad sandwiches, and in came a G.I. Santa Claus. Have you ever seen a G.I. Santa Claus? USO had a Santa Claus. And the Santa Claus came in, he goes, ho, 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 and he gave us Christmas gifts. And remember, Santa Claus handed me a Christmas gift, and what was it? It was the Christmas gift that all GIs hate to get. It was a money belt. They keep giving you money belts, you know, the kind that you strap around you. The one thing that the GIs never had was money. So having a money belt was totally academic. So I said, well, you know, great. And I ate some more tuna salad sandwiches. And we walked over to the desk and asked the desk if if they had any tickets to anything. They were giving out tickets to various shows. And they asked us, and sure enough, I got a ticket to a hockey game. It was the first big league hockey game I ever saw, and we went to see the New York Rangers were playing the Boston Hockey Club. They were playing the Boston Club, and I remember amazed, you see, at this fantastic arena. We were in Madison Square Garden, sitting there watching the hockey. Well, the hockey game went on and on and on. And we didn't know much about hockey. We just sat there and watched a hockey game. And that night, after the hockey game, we came back out. We had no place to stay. We had 24 hours, no place to live in. And we wandered around back to the USO. It was Christmas Eve. And I had my money belt in my hand. Christmas Santa Clauses were standing on the corner rattling bells at us. We got back to the USO, and somebody said, here's a place to stay. Gave us two tickets. And that night, that Christmas Eve, I spent sleeping in the swimming pool, the empty swimming pool of a Midtown New York hotel. Free. We slept. Yeah, they had cots in the swimming pool. And they were taking GIs in free on this Christmas Eve. And we registered at the desk. You had to register, I remember. And they sent us down to the swimming pool. We went down, climbed down the ladder. And put our stuff on the cots and sat on the edge of the cots with my money belt. And I couldn't believe it. In came Santa Claus again. The hotel had a Santa Claus for all the GIs who were sleeping in the swimming pool. And Santa Claus gave it, ho, ho, ho. And he walked up and down and he gave us gifts. And I got this Christmas stocking. It was a red Christmas stocking. And in the Christmas stocking was something I really wanted. It was another money belt. So I had my money belt, and it was a package of razor blades in there. And, stuff, the really romantic stuff. There was a package of razor blades, and there was some Lifebuoy soap. Really great stuff. You can use that. And Santa Claus walked up and down, gave us hard candy. And I sat on the edge of the bunk. It was Christmas Eve. I looked over, there's Gasser. He's got his money belt. And, he's taking off his jump shoes. And I says, Gasser, Merry Christmas. And he says, Shepard, Merry Christmas. Where's Edward? I says, well, he's in the John. He'll be out. He was always going to the John. He came back out. I says, Merry Christmas, Edwards. And Company K's elite celebrated Christmas Eve in a swimming pool in the Henry Hudson Hotel in Midtown, New York. And they come and go. Merry Christmas, gang. Hang in there good. And think clean thoughts. What do you say?